I'd like to call the Senate Community and Regional Affairs Committee to order. Today's Thursday, May 13th. Let the record reflect the time is 3:41. Thank you for your patience. We were trying to assemble a quorum. Today we have present Vice Chair Senator Myers, Senator David Wilson, and myself, Chair Hughes, and Senator Hoffman is in Senate Finance. Senator Gray Jackson is in another committee hearing and will be coming along. Thank you to Christopher Dickrell with Senate Records and Alex Benizak, with the LIO and Dawson Mann helping our committee. First, we're going to hear SB 136, Limitations on Firearm Restrictions by Senator Myers. We'll hear both invited and public testimony on that. Next, we'll go to SB 119, Oath of Office by Senator Reinbold, and we will also hear invited and public testimony on that bill. Reminder that the deadline for amendments on SB 119 were set for today at noon, and none were received by my office. The third bill that we will hear is SB 135, Alaska Community Health Aid Appreciation Day by Senator Kawasaki. We will again hear invited and public testimony on this bill. And let me remind you that the deadline for amendments on this, it's too fast. So it's not a really reminder because it was today at noon, it's passed. So, and then fourth bill we will hear is SB 131, workers' comp disability for firefighters by Senator Holland. And that deadline was Monday at 5, and we didn't receive any amendments on that one either. So now, here we got ready to rock and roll with SB 136, Limitation on Firearm Restrictions. Senator Meyer and his staff, Michaela Anderson, are at the table. So welcome to the committee from a different angle. Please put yourself on the record and tell us about SB 136.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Senator Myers, District B, North Pole, Fairbanks. So we brought SB 136 before you to deal with, try to find a little bit of clarification. We went through a year-long disaster declaration effectively here over this past year, and one of the issues that came up was our Second Amendment rights. And for the most part, throughout the state of Alaska, there wasn't any serious issues. We dealt with some issues in terms of supply chain problems, but that's not the state's fault. That was going on nationwide with a number of products. But we did end up with one issue in Anchorage about opening up businesses, firearms businesses that most places were classified as an essential business, but there were issues in Anchorage. And so we've brought one Senate Bill 136 before you to help clarify what sort of restrictions can and cannot be created due to a disaster declaration on our ability to own and operate firearms. And effectively, what this bill is aiming to do is simply say that a state agency or a municipality can't come up with new firearms rules based on a disaster declaration. We're not trying to change any current regulations or rules or statutes. We're simply trying to clarify that you can't use the instance of a disaster as a color under which to come up with quick and dirty emergency rules. So with that, I'll turn it over to my staff, Michaela Anderson, to run through a short presentation sectional.
All right. I'd like to add, too, that there were seven states.
Please state your name.
Oh, I'm sorry. For the record, Michaela Anderson, staff to Senator Robert Myers. I'd like to add that there were seven states where there was mandated complete or partial closures of gun stores, ammunition stores, or firing ranges as they were deemed non-essential. So we want to prevent that from happening in Alaska. So governors may declare states of emergency, as we all know that, and police powers are granted by the state constitution. We kind of went through our sponsor statement. And then I have some slides that go into the sectional analysis, but the short and sweet of it is Section 1A lists the state or municipality may not impose various restrictions on Second Amendment rights. Section 1B clarifies that this section does not apply to a person who is not already legally allowed to exercise their Second Amendment rights. Section 1C establishes that a person or organization of more than two may bring civil action to the Superior Court if they are adversely affected by the imposition of their Second Amendment rights. Section 1D states that the plaintiff under the previous subsection may recover attorney fees or court costs. Section 1E defines what a state or municipal agency is. And Section 2 repeals the definition of a firearm accessory as it was moved to the definition section above, which we have on the slide here. Firearm meaning given AS 1181-900, and firearm accessory means the item that is used in conjunction with or mounted on a firearm but not essential to the basic fire function of a firearm. So those are your sights, magazines. So that was our sectional. I believe we do have Aveen Klein from the NRA on the line. If there are any other questions.
Okay. Do members have any questions? Senator Wilson, do you have a question before we bring Aveen? I do have a question just because you referred to the municipality of Anchorage, and I'm a little fuzzy-brained on this, but early in the pandemic when we weren't quite sure what things were what was going to happen, did the governor not issue a mandate that was closing things except for what they considered essential businesses? And I remember hearing that marijuana shops were allowed to be open and alcohol, but places that sold firearms weren't. So it wasn't just a municipal situation. Wasn't there a short window where it was actually statewide?
Madam Chair, my understanding, and I'd have to double check this to be sure, was that the state, when the state listed essential businesses, it included firearms stores as essential businesses, and they were able to stay open. For example, we have firearm stores in Fairbanks that stayed open the entire time. The difference, and in Anchorage as well, they listed hunting and fishing supply stores as essential businesses as well. However, what we have been gathering as we've been calling various businesses in Anchorage over the past couple of weeks, what we've learned is that in the implementation of that, they played a little fast and loose with some of the definitions. So, for example, in order to be classified as a hunting supply store, they had to have a certain percentage of the square footage of the store dedicated to firearms and firearms-related material, ammunition, et cetera. And so stores that were 100% gun stores, usually small mom and pops, were allowed to stay open. However, some of the larger stores, such as Cabela's, Sportsman's Warehouse, et cetera, were closed by on order of the municipality. And the other issue that we ran into is because they had those different rules in there and they played a little fast and loose with them from what we can tell, there were a number of complaints that were filed against multiple stores. And so each time somebody would call the municipality, complain that a store was open, the municipality would call the store. They'd have to hash it out either by phone or by email. And so they're dealing with that extra regulation on top of it. So what this bill would do essentially is flip the burden of proof. So instead of a store having to prove to the municipality that it was allowed to stay open, now the municipality would have to prove to the store that they had to close. And so what the language in the bill states is that a gun store can be closed, but only if commerce in general is closed in that area. So my personal example is if you had a Sportsman's Warehouse and a Target sitting next to each other, either they're both open or they're both closed.
Okay, thank you. And thank you for clarifying it, because I had heard it was mixed in with what the state was mandating. But based on what you said, it wasn't. It was how municipalities were interpreting that and moving forward with it. And your research only showed that the municipality of Anchorage did that, or is it possible that help happened elsewhere, but you're just not sure?
Madam Chair, so far, municipality of Anchorage is the only one that we have heard about. We didn't have time to call every municipality in the state, but that's our understanding. We hadn't heard of any others.
And so then on line 13-14 of page 1, so we're not breaking anything into, we're not worrying about essential, non-essential. We're just saying if any stores open for commerce, these stores should be open as well.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Okay, great. Thank you. So are there any other questions? All right, then we have Aveen Klein on. Is she showing? Oh, she's on Teams. Okay, great.
Madam Chair.
Yes, please. Please introduce yourself for the record and your affiliation and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Hughes, Vice Chair Myers, Hoffman, and honorable members of the Community and Regional Affairs Committee. For the record, my name is Avine Klein, State Director for the National Rifle Association. On behalf of the tens of thousands of NRA members across the state of Alaska, thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony today in strong support of Senate Bill 136. The Second Amendment of the United States Constitution and Article 1, Section 19 of the Alaska State Constitution provide that the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Senate Bill 136 seeks to protect that right by restricting a state or municipal agency from limiting those rights under the guise of an emergency disaster declaration. This bill is in response to current events and the COVID-19 emergency. This bill recognizes that each emergency disaster declaration is unique. It is unique in its effect and the government's response. When a firearm store is closed, when ammunition is not allowed to be sold, when gun ranges are shut down, and when concealed carry permits are not issued, an individual's ability to keep and bear arms becomes hindered and rendered impossible. For example, the COVID-19 pandemic negatively impacted Anchorage based on businesses under Mayor Berkowitz's Hunker Down Emergency Order 03. While this issue seemed to be centralized to this municipality at this time, as the NRA has seen and has had to intervene across the country during this pandemic, any municipality without 136 could be next. Senate Bill 136 simply ensures that firearm-related businesses, shooting ranges, and the individual rights to keep and bear arms are not unjustly singled out for any political reason. This is achieved by allowing state and municipal agencies to restrict firearms-related businesses so long as the closure or limitation applies equally across all forms of commerce within the jurisdiction. Under the United States Supreme Court decision, D.C. v. Heller, the court found that mandatory storage locking requirements were unconstitutional because it rendered firearms impossible to operate in order to exercise the core right protected under the Second Amendment, self-defense. Denying Alaskans access to firearms, ammunition, critical accessories, and shooting ranges also renders firearms inoperable, thereby rendering those firearms impossible to operate for the core Second Amendment right of self-defense. Senate Bill 136 is a narrowly tailored solution to a specific problem: restrictions of firearms under an emergency declaration. And for that, I urge your aye vote today on Senate Bill 136. I'm happy to address any questions from the committee at this time, and thank you on behalf of NRA members.
Thank you, Ms. Klein. Are there any questions? And are there any other comments before we move to public testimony? Seeing none, I'm going to open public testimony. First on our list, we have Ann Caulfield. Ann, could you please state your name and affiliation, proceed with your testimony? Each testifier will have 2 minutes.
Yes, thank you very much. Good afternoon. My name is Annie Caulfield, and I'm here as a volunteer with Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America. I stand in strong opposition to SB 136. I reside in Juneau and am a mother, grandmother, and retired school counselor. I worked in elementary schools throughout the state of Alaska from 1983 to 2015. I am deeply concerned about this bill, SB 136, that would restrict public universities and school districts from setting firearm policy. It would also prevent local authorities from regulating whether a person at risk for suicide or domestic violence should have their access to firearms temporarily restricted. During my tenure as a school counselor, domestic violence and its effects on children was something I dealt with on a regular basis. Sadly, exposure to violence is a reality for many children in our communities. When domestic violence involves the presence of a firearm, the situation can turn deadly quickly. I have worked with children who witnessed family members killed or seriously injured by firearms, and such trauma impacts these children for their whole lives. It is devastating, tragic, and it doesn't have to happen. With appropriate and reasonable approaches, law enforcement can temporarily restrict firearms when someone is in danger of hurting themselves or others. I believe that Juneau's local officials, mayors, and police chiefs are best equipped to understand local crime and how to address it. Please do not take away their ability to keep our children and all of our citizens safe. Thank you very much for hearing my testimony. Please join me in every effort to ensure that Alaska has safe communities.
Thank you, Ms. Caulfield, for your testimony today. Next, we will move to Luann McVeigh. Please state your name for the record and proceed also with your affiliation, and you have 2 minutes.
Good afternoon. My name is Luann McVeigh, and I live in Douglas. I would like to echo the testimony of Annie Caulfield. I've lived in Alaska since 1957. I'm a gun-owning volunteer for the Alaska chapter of Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America. I'm also a retired teacher who earned a master's degree at UAF. I'm a mother of 2 University of Alaska graduates and a grandmother. I oppose SB 136 because our state already has a strong preemption law that keeps local authorities from overriding the state policy on firearm regulation. This bill narrows that law and aims to stop schools or other entities from protecting against gun violence. I can't fathom why anyone would want to prevent public universities from setting their own campus firearm policies. It's obvious that young people use alcohol sometimes to excess, resulting in increased aggression and impaired judgment in deciding whether to use a gun to solve a problem. Guns don't belong on college campuses, and state legislators shouldn't make colleges less safe by limiting the ability of a university to set firearm policy. Every town for gun safety compiles statistics related to gun violence and has shown that for 20 million students attending colleges or universities, an average of 10 homicides occurs each year. Having more guns on campus increases the likelihood of more shootings, but is not likely to prevent mass shootings on campus. Local universities should be in charge of these policies, not the legislature. SB 136 is not needed in our state, and I urge you to prevent its passage. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. McVeigh. Next is Ann Gifford. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. You have 2 minutes.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Ann Gifford. I'm a retired attorney from Juneau, and I have some personal experience with some of the issues addressed by this bill because of my past work with Alaska school districts and local government. I'm here today on my own as a concerned citizen to say that SB 136 is a poorly thought-out bill that seeks to establish bad policies and would also create a legal mess. I ask you not to pass it out of committee. The sponsor says the purpose of the bill is to make sure that state and local agencies don't create new firearm rules during an emergency. But the wording of the bill is much broader than that. It's not narrowly tailored. It essentially seeks to prohibit any municipality, school district, university, or any state or local agency from regulating the possession or use of a firearm in any way. That's what the language says. This would conflict with several existing laws, and it would also be very bad public policy. The right to bear arms, like other constitutional rights, isn't unlimited. There are some places guns simply don't belong. Our courts, including the U.S. Supreme Court, have recognized for hundreds of years that it's legitimate for governments to restrict the carrying of guns in sensitive places like schools and government buildings. This is just common sense. As you've probably experienced, emotions can run high when people come to address the legislature and when they come to address their local assembly. They can also run high in school, including in colleges and universities, over grades and over treatment by other students. Keeping guns out of these places helps protect everyone who works and lives and studies in them. What's more, the kinds of places and the occasions where guns should not be allowed can vary from community to community. What makes sense for Anchorage may not make sense for Sitka.
Ms. Gifford, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you're past the 2 minutes, and I just want to put on the record that Senator Greg Jackson has joined us. Ms. Gifford, if you could make a final closing statement, please.
Yes. I hope that you, as the community, as the Committee on Community and Regional Affairs, won't approve a bill that takes away all local control on such an important topic. Thanks for your service to our state.
Thank you for your testimony today. Next up is Michael Finley. Please state your name and affiliation and begin your two-minute testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Michael Finley. I'm with the National Shooting Sports Foundation. We are the trade association for most manufacturers, retailers, and ranges in the country. And we are standing today in strong support of SB 136. I won't add too much that Avian Klein with the NRA has already added to this, but I think it's important to make a distinction when I was listening to the opposition testimony. And this bill is really about limiting a governor's ability to deem the firearm industry as non-essential during times of crisis. What we did see during this pandemic is, in the beginning, when the CISA guidance was handed down by the White House, most governors around the country followed it. Unfortunately, governors around the country, for political reasons, decided to admit certain things. And while ranges, retailers, and our manufacturing, our firearms manufacturing industry, was deemed essential, there were governors around the nation that decided for political reasons that they would not include that in their own declarations. This bill simply says that a governor cannot come in and treat the Second Amendment in a way that is not essential, that because of the very nature of our industry, that people during times of crisis should be afforded the opportunity to obtain their Second Amendment rights to exercise those so that they can protect their families during those times. With that, I'll stand for any questions that you might have. Again, this is the National Shooting Sports Foundation in strong support of SB 136. Thank you, committee.
Thank you, Mr. Finley. Appreciate your testimony. Next is Carrie Hansen. Please state your name and affiliation and begin your two-minute testimony.
I'm sorry, did you just say Carrie Hansen?
Yes, I did. Please begin.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. My name is Carrie Hansen, and I live in Soldotna, Alaska. I am a volunteer with the Alaska chapter of Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America, and I'm here today to call on lawmakers to oppose Senate Bill 136. I am a lifelong Alaskan, and I have witnessed many times when guns have not been used responsibly in my community, and we have all lost multiple friends to gun suicide. Too many Alaskans die each year from gun homicide, gun suicide, or unintentional shootings. The statistics are tragic. Our state has the highest rate of gun deaths in the country. Over 66% of the gun deaths in Alaska are suicides, and Alaska's gun suicide rate is more than double the national average. Guns are the leading cause of death for Alaskan children and teens. And from 2010 to 2019, the rate of gun deaths in Alaska increased 19%. Clearly, we have a gun violence crisis in Alaska that is getting worse, not better. In response, the state legislature should be taking reasonable steps to save Alaskan lives and lower the rate of gun deaths, not prohibiting municipalities, school districts, and the university from protecting Alaskans. This blanket preemption is not necessary in Alaska, where we already have a law that governs the limits of municipal regulation of firearms. About 2 years ago here in Soldotna, a man unintentionally just discharged his weapon he was carrying in our local Kaladi Brothers coffee shop and shot his wife. Guns don't belong in every public place. States that have passed legislation forcing colleges to allow guns on campus are struggling to deal with the consequences, both in terms of campus safety and in terms of economic costs. These laws result in new expenses, including additional police and security staff, metal detectors, cameras, and protective gear. The fact that insurance companies find guns on campus as a huge liability helps to explain why they are not a good idea. In West Virginia, the Guns on Campus bill proposed in 2019 was estimated to cost more than $11 million to implement.
Ms. Hansen, the 2 minutes is up. Can you please provide a closing statement?
Yes. I am asking you please not to pass this out of committee. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony this afternoon. And next up and last up is Heather Kopanen. At least online, we'll check if there are testifiers in the room. But Heather, if you could state your name and affiliation and begin your 2 minutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Heather Kopanen. I'm testifying for myself. I very much appreciate the very well-documented and vetted testimony of Caulfield, McVeigh, and Gifford and Hansen. I was a medical professional, and I saw injuries from guns that were totally unnecessary. This bill, unlike the for-profit lobbyists from NRA and Finley, who, because they profit financially from this, I believe their testimony should count much less than us normal citizens of the state of Alaska. They claim that this is essential business, and I do not think that it is essential business. While somebody hunting may essentially need bullets for the gun they already own, it is not essential to make money from weapons that cause severe injury and death. And accessories, likewise, are not essential. These are listed in the bill. And this bill, unlike the claims of the lobbyists for profit, is not about essential business. And it is about broadening the strength of these lobbyists and the interpretation they put forth for their profit of this United States Constitution Second Amendment is a very dubious interpretation. The Second Amendment, the amendment includes well-formed militia. It is not the way these folks are interpreting it. I urge you not to pass this out of committee.
Thank you for your testimony this afternoon, Heather. Is there anyone in the room who wishes to testify on SB 136? Seeing none, I will close testimony at this time. Are there any comments from committee members? I want to encourage anyone listening or anyone in the room that you can send your testimony to by email to SCRA, that's for Senate Community Regional Affairs, at akleg.gov. I am going to extend the deadline for amendments on SB 136 to Monday the 17th at 12 noon, and we will set SB 136 aside at this time. Thank you very much, Senator Myers and Michaela. And I will now welcome Senator Reinbold to come to the table for SB 119, Oath of Office. We'll take an at-ease. Record. Welcome, Senator Reinbold, to our committee. Please put yourself on the record and tell us about SB 119.
Good afternoon, Chair Hughes and Vice Chair Myers and wonderful committees of the Community and Regional Affairs.
This is the first time
I've been before this committee this year, so thank you for the privilege of being before you today. My name is Senator Laura Reinbold. I represent District G. Okay, so basically what Senate Bill 119 does, it's very simple, but I think it's a very important concept to just ensure we don't take for granted the founding documents that have held this country together and provided so much peace and to the greatest nation in the world, in my opinion. But basically all this does is it requires anybody that is already, we're not adding anybody new, but anybody who's already required to take the oath, and we have a good doggone reason to have to take the oath, but anybody who is required to take an oath just has to ensure that they read the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution of the United States, the Constitution of the State of Alaska, sign a copy, and file it. And in education, the only change we made, you probably would want to speak to that, Senator Hughes, but it is filed with the municipal clerk in the area. So with that, I'm here to answer questions.
Okay. Are there questions that members have or comments? We had school boards initially in this, and we thought if school board members were going to be in it, then other municipal officials should also. So that's why that's in this committee. So if there are no questions, I am going to go ahead and open public testimony. And I do not see anyone online to testify. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify on SB 119? Seeing none, I'll close public testimony. And also those listening, I'll give that email address if you want to email in your testimony. That's SCRA for Senate Community Regional Affairs at akled.gov. Any questions or comments? Senator Myers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Reinbold, so my question is, with 119, do you believe that the issues that we are facing are because people are not reading and paying attention to the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, or because we have different interpretations of them?
I think, that's a very complicated, tough question to answer, but I will tell you that it just never hurts. I think all the students should be reading the Declaration of Independence, because if you don't read the Declaration of Independence, you don't know all the grievances, you know, that of what was happening, in the early days of America. And so just understanding the grievances, and then you have a greater appreciation for, you know, the civil liberties, the Bill of Rights, inherent rights, and things like that. I just think reminding everybody, making sure that they don't just take it for granted like they know the documents, just making sure that they read them clearly and understand that the oath that they're taking. But I would have to ask you, is there a specific question, you know, that you'd have? Is there a specific incidents that you're referring to? But bottom line is, I just think it's a really good refresher course. I think some people may or may not have read the documents in recent history before they take the oath, and I just think it's a really valuable, wonderful document, the documents, especially when you read them, you know, all three at the same time.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. At this time, what is the will of the committee? Senator Myers?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that SB 119, Work Order 32-LS0163/G, be moved from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
And hearing...
I'll object because I have a quick question.
Yes, Senator Wilson.
I didn't get to ask yet. Senator Reinbold, are we just reading the Constitution and not the entire Constitution and the amendments to those constitutions as well, or just the original Constitution? Because I could just read the Constitution, not read those additional 20-plus amendments, and that would suffice, or are we talking about the Constitution in its entirety?
Senator Reinbold?
It would be the entirety. So it would be the Declaration of Independence, the United States Constitution, and the Constitution of the State of Alaska. And I want to put one other thing on record, is that when I was reading the different statutes, the judges do it a little bit different than the school board did it a little bit different than the elected officials did it a little bit different than the police officers. And all this does is it just conforms us all to the same platform, because the statutes were written at a different time. But I believe that answers your question, Senator Wilson.
Yeah,
and I will just add that this does go to judiciary. That's a good question, but I think the common street definition of constitution, whether it's state or U.S., includes the amendments. If you Google our state constitution, it includes all the amendments in it. So I think that typically does occur. And I'll just, since you did object and there's a little more conversation, in response to Senator Myers, I am guessing that some people don't read them, and this will help, because if you're going to sign something that says you read it, then you're probably going to be much more apt to read it. So with that, do you maintain your objection?
I'll remove my objection.
Okay, and hearing no other objection, the bill moves from committee. We'll take a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork. Thank you, Senator Reinbold. We are back on the record, and we now have SB 135, Alaska Community Health Aid Appreciation Day, before us. And we have Joe Hayes, staff to Senator Kawasaki here. So welcome to the Senate Community Regional Affairs Committee. Please put yourself on the record and tell us about SB 135, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Joe Hayes, staff to Senator Scott Kawasaki from District A in Fairbanks. And let me read the sponsor statement on 135, an act establishing September 10th as Alaska Community Health Aid Appreciation Day. Senate Bill 135 aims to recognize and honor the exemplary work of community health aides by proclaiming September 10th as Community Health Aid Appreciation Day. The date was chosen to commemorate the first planning and advisory committee meeting for health aid programs in Alaska, which took place on September 10th, 1973. The work of the community health aid is tireless. In the communities they serve, they act as round-the-clock first responders, clinicians, travel coordinators, hospitalists, tribal liaisons, and often role models within their home region. Since before statehood, health aides have organized and played an integral role in maintaining tribal health and community safety. They are often related to or close to their parents, patients, and bring to their positions an abiding respect for traditional knowledge and culture. Recently, community health aides have been on the front lines of the fight against COVID-19 in rural Alaska and have been key to ensuring the success of vaccination efforts in remote communities that lacked advanced health care services. It's more important than ever that we acknowledge our community health aides for their broad scope of practice and selfless contributions to their communities, regions, and the state. For that reason, I urge the passage of Senate Bill 135. And Madam Chair, I'd like to present a PowerPoint if there are not any questions.
Let's move on to your PowerPoint. It might answer some questions someone may have.
Okay, so the first slide, just wanted to say Alaska is the land of extremes in size, weather, and geography. 80% of the state does not have a road system, meaning much of the state is dependent on air travel. As a result of variable and sometimes dangerous weather conditions, when hospital care is needed, it may not be accessible. In an effort to bring care as close to home as possible, the Alaska Community Health Aid Program was born. Community health aids provide a sustainable, successful, and culturally relevant health care delivery system in Alaska. They function as part of a regional team that assists and provides emergent, acute, and chronic medical care in remote Alaska communities. These providers are selected by their communities to take part in 4 sessions of training, each lasting 3 to 4 weeks. With this highly focused training, health aides are able to deliver quality care in a rural environment where they're often limited resources. Alaska Health Aid Program dates to before statehood, when Dr. Walter Johnson trained local Alaskans to help combat an outbreak of tuberculosis. During the 1960s, the Alaska Area Native Health Service began formal health aid training efforts, and in 1968, the program received formal recognition and congressional funding. On September 10, 1973, the first Planning and Advisory Committee meeting for health aid programs in Alaska was held. The date was chosen for the Community Health Aid Appreciation Day in honor of this historic event. Later in the 70s, Congress approved funding for additional community health aid positions, expanding the program further. And in 1998, the Community Health Aid Program Certification Board was created by the federal government in charge of formalizing the process of certifying and maintaining health aides in the training centers. Between 2001 and 2009, the program was expanded to include dental and behavioral health aides. Today, health aides are the backbone of the healthcare system in rural Alaska. There are currently 550 health aid practitioners in more than 170 communities, and 4 community health aid training centers in Anchorage, Nome, Bethel, and Fairbanks. Health aides help people of all ages and backgrounds with a wide variety of healthcare needs. As local community providers, health aides can incorporate local and traditional knowledge into their care. The Alaska Tribal Health System strives to increase access to care by making services available in local communities. And community health aides constitute the front line of healthcare in these remote villages. The ATHS is made up of approximately 37 tribes or tribal health organizations with signed agreements to manage a healthcare facility under the Alaska Area Native Health Service of the Indian Health Services. This shows the Alaska Tribal Health System referral pattern and just how large these areas are when compared to the rest of the United States. To manage this, the Alaska Tribal Health System uses a hub and spoke model for healthcare referrals. The aim of the hub and spoke referral pattern is to keep care close to home. The spoke of the wheel radiates out in a specific region to individual communities and sub-regional clinics. The center of the referral pattern of the region's largest hub and community contains hospital services, multi-level practitioners, and physicians. Throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, health aides have worked tirelessly and at great personal risk to keep their communities as safe and healthy as possible. They set up the test sites and conducted broad COVID testing. Community health aides have been key to ensuring the success of vaccination distribution across Alaska. One incredible example of this occurred in the representative's Zukoski's district, where there was a point in 2020 when the YK Delta had the highest case rate of COVID-19 in the nation. After vaccines became available in December 2020, the YK Delta led the nation in vaccine deployment, vaccinating nearly 50% of the region's eligible population. And as of April 16, 60% of the region's eligible population had been vaccinated, and by April 23rd, the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation reported that COVID-19 cases in the YK Delta was the lowest they had been since September 2020. And the number of new cases in the last 2 weeks prior to April 23rd was 20 times lower than it was during the two-week span that was the peak of COVID-19 in that region. And with that, Madam Chair, I have two folks who would like to testify, and they are both Jarrett Sherman and Taryn Hughes as my invited testimony, Madam Chair.
Okay, yes, we have them online. Are there any questions or comments from members? I will just make a comment that my husband's very first position after his training, school and clinical rotations and getting licensed was through Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation, supervising health aides in 50 villages and then providing iterant patient care when he would go visit them at their clinics, and became very fond of the model. And that was quite a few decades ago. And I'm sure we'll be if this bill passes, we'll be it'll be the very first Community Health Appreciation Day in the nation, because this is a unique position here in this state. Are you aware, Mr. Hayes, have any other states created health aid positions like we have here? Are we still the only state that has them?
And through the chair, Senator Hughes, as far as I know, we're the only state because we're so unique as far as our rural areas versus many areas in the lower 48. But I'll look into that further.
Yeah, and I believe you said there are 550 and operating in communities where they are the sole provider. In many cases, unless a physician or some other provider comes in. So they do an awesome job, and they deserve to be appreciated, I believe. I'll hold off. We'll go ahead, and we'll go to Taryn Hughes, if you'd like to provide testimony. What's that?
Nice dog.
Oh. Well, we're enjoying the dog, yeah.
Can you hear me?
We can.
I can hear me, so you can hear me. So. Okay. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members, and thank you for hearing our testimony today. My name is Taryn Hughes, and I work for Guardian Flight Alaska here in Fairbanks. So I've worked in the medevac industry for about 3 years, mainly in the Tanana Chiefs or the TCC region. Before that, I lived and worked in the community of Tok and all of the outlying villages for about 10 years. So what I learned in that time period is that health aides are absolutely a vital resource to Alaskan healthcare systems. I had a whole spiel about their roles, but Joe did an excellent job covering those, so I won't be redundant. Thank you, Joe. But I do want to give you an example of some of the just one example of the work that health aides in these rural villages do and the types of patients that they're seeing. So I have a story of a health aide in one remote village in the interior who performed CPR on a patient for 4 hours while she waited for weather to clear and a medevac plane to safely land. And the patient was her great uncle. So just to give you an idea of the not just the physical work that they do, but the scope of emotional work that they're doing in those villages for their communities. So, and then I just want to talk about the fact that the Community Health Aid Program was pioneered by Alaska. It started here, and we are moving to a national platform. You were correct in saying, Madam Chair, that there is no state-sanctioned Health Aid Appreciation Day anywhere else in the country, because we are pioneering that as well, hopefully today, beginning today. But it is the program is beginning to gain national acclaim, and we even have some health aid trainers and representatives on a nationwide board that represents Alaska, and they are following our model pretty closely. Additionally, I just want to finally and lastly mention that right now we are in the middle of National Nurses Week, and we are heading into National EMS Week. I'm hoping that eventually we have a National Health Aid Week, but I think we really should be the pioneers of this, just working so closely with health aides. And the timing of this bill is really symbolic. Passing SB 135 This week sends a clear message to our health aides that their role in ensuring the health and safety of their communities is as important as the nurses and the paramedics that they work alongside every day. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there member questions from members? Taryn, you said that there's a national movement. So are there actually states that are allowing health aides to work in medical settings now outside of Alaska?
Yes, and they are. From my conversations with, and I can give you context if you're curious, but with my contacts with TCC and my conversations with them, it's a national board, and they're actually traveling down into the states and working with other tribal health organizations to implement a model of health aid training that is similar, if not exactly the same as ours.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. And next we will move, thank you, Taryn, to Jared Sherman, who also is on Teams. So, Mr. Sherman.
Yeah, thank you very much for this opportunity. I'm Jared Sherman. I'm the Vice President of Operations for Global Medical Response, and that's Guardian Flight Alaska's parent company. And I grew up in Alaska, grew up in Fairbanks, and would travel around with my father to the YK School District and spent time in the villages. And then my first job at a college was with the Alaska Municipal League Joint Insurance Association. I would travel to the hub villages and then to the remote villages and spend the night. And I would oftentimes walk through the clinics, and it never really clicked how vital a link that was to the healthcare system. And about 12 years ago, I joined the medevac industry within the state of Alaska. And I truly began to recognize that healthcare is local and health aides are that key piece to the connection of the healthcare system. And so as we began to talk earlier this year and meet with different health aides to talk how they were handling COVID, we heard of times where they would have to go into people's houses, put PPE on, go in and support them because they couldn't even work in their clinic because of the potential exposure to the rest of the community. So I come in and want to support the health aides across Alaska because every single medevac we complete out of the villages is started, and that key piece is the health aid. And the work that they do is absolutely vital and amazing. So I support Senate Bill 135, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sherman. Any questions for Mr. Sherman? Seeing none, we'll come back to you, Mr. Hayes. And I may have missed it, but are the health aides, were they administering the vaccines during the pandemic?
And through the chair, Representative Senator Hughes, yes, they were.
Okay, I saw the photograph, and then I realized I may have missed your comment on that. And I think it's really interesting. A lot of times when we have a bill on a certain topic, on a certain profession, you would actually have people from that profession as your testifiers. But because we're appreciating, it'd be kind of strange for them to say, hey, pass the data, appreciate me. But it's so cool to have those that aren't health aides being your special, your guests today and invited testimony. So I appreciate that. I did want to mention one thing just to correct for the record. In your sponsor statement, you mentioned many of the amazing roles that and job and things they have to do, and you list them at acting as hospitalists by definition are physicians who work in hospitals, so probably you might want to modify that work. And at one point my husband was the medical director for the Fort Yukon Clinic, which was a very busy clinic, and it was a primary care clinic during the day, and at night, it was often an emergency room, and when weather was bad, it became a mini hospital because of having to keep people there. So I can see, and you know, with health aides working in that setting, they could essentially be doing at sometimes hospital work. So I just thought I'd bring that on the record because we don't want to be saying health aides are physicians working in hospitals. So with that, we're going now. Are there any other comments? And seeing none, we will open public testimony for SB 135, Alaska Community Health Aid Appreciation Day. And I see online we have Heather Koponen from Fairbanks. Heather, you have 2 minutes for your testimony, please, on SB 135.
Thank you, Madam Chair and honorable legislators. Thank you for your nonviolent service. Community health aides are heroes. They save lives, they heal, they comfort, they are of the communities they serve. I know from firsthand experience, and maybe it's strange for me to speak as one, as you mentioned, rather than from the outside. I was born and raised in Interior Alaska, and I was a community health aide, and I progressed in trainings to be a community health practitioner, and this is the work history I'm most proud of. Although I went on to become a physician assistant who later trained CHAs and CHPs and served on statewide training committees, and I was an EMS trainer and up to EMT3. The presentation given gave a good overview of the program. Most health aides offer the highest level medical care available in their communities and do all aspects of care, reception, nursing, history, exam, laboratory, diagnosis, treatment, including dispensing appropriate patient education, which is often overlooked in other places, vaccinations, yes, the COVID vaccine, medications and consultation with physicians and mid-level practitioners, sutures and such things as adaptive equipment and splints. They receive and maintain emergency training and provide IVs, EKGs, defibrillation, oxygenation, and other forms of stabilization in the clinic for hours sometimes, or longer depending on the weather and transportation, but usually in preparation for emergency transport to hospitals. Health aides, as they're commonly called, even though many are community health practitioners, are on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, often for weeks or months on end, and too often without respite. This was definitely my case, but I was in a very small village that was not so busy. Others are kept busy constantly. They live in the communities they serve and serve everyone equally. They are held to high moral as well as medical standards. It is often a very difficult job that involves many sacrifices. Again, community health aides are heroes. Establishing Alaska Community Health Aid Appreciation Day is a very modest but meaningful step in recognizing and honoring them. My name is Heather Copeland, 687 Chena Ridge, Fairbanks, 99709, and you should have gotten an email copy of most of what I said.
Thank you, Ms. Copeland, for your testimony today and your service in the field of health care, helping folks. We appreciate it today for your being with us. And I'm not seeing anyone else online. Anyone in the room wish to testify on SB 135, Alaska Community Health Aid Appreciation Day? Seeing none, I will close public testimony. And are there any comments or questions from members? Again, testimony can email to SCRA, that's for Senate Community Regional Affairs, at akleg.gov. What is the will of the committee, Senator Myers?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that Senate Bill 135, Work Order 320-LS0898/alpha, be moved from the committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
And hearing no objection, the bill moves from committee, and we'll take a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork and transition to the next bill. on the record, and we're moving on to SB 131, Workers' Comp Disability for Firefighters. We have at the table with us Senator Holland and his staff, Nikki Rose. Welcome to the committee. And I am looking, I just want to see if we have anyone online. We do, just for questions, so you know, we have Charles Collins, the Director of Workers' Compensation, is online if we have questions. And we also have Laurie Winghire, Division of Insurance Director, here in the room as well. So do you have any remarks before we begin public testimony, Senator Holland?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I won't say much. I'll just say it was remarkable to hear stories of firefighters about how they can be sitting down eating breakfast and within 4 minutes standing inside a burning structure that they've never been in before. And it is an inherently dangerous career, but beyond that, the number one killer of the number one cause of line of duty deaths between 2002 and 2019 was cancer. 66% of the firefighters' line of duty deaths between those years was due to some form of cancer, and there is SB 131 addresses a gap in the Alaska statutes. Breast cancer is not covered, and that was first proposed to me as a female firefighter issue. As women become a larger and larger part of the firefighting force, it was a possible oversight. But then the fact came to me that if you're a male firefighter, you're 7.5 times more likely to die of breast cancer than a male counterpart not working in the fire service. So I believe SB 131 resolves a lot of that oversight. There's still other issues to work on about the presumptive coverage laws for Alaska firefighters, but SB 131 is a good start. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And Nikki, do you have any comments you'd like to make before we move? Okay. Are there? What's that?
Through the chair, no.
Okay, does she need to state her name for that response? members, do you have any questions or comments? I actually do before we go to public testimony, because there was a letter of opposition that came in from the Alaska Public Entity Insurance. Did you get a chance to review that?
No, Madam Chair, I did not.
Yeah, and they're mentioning that it could increase the cost to municipalities, and that this is something that just regular health insurance would take care of. And so I think it might be something we could bring Ms. Winghire up, because I think on record we need to make it clear that there's not an expected cost increase from what I understand. Is that your understanding,
Madam Chair? The workers' comp insurance covers not just the other nine presumptive causes, but it also covers every other thing that's involved in the dangerous life of a firefighter. Ms. Winghire is more than welcome to come up here and speak on it. The thought was that if it increased it would be, I think the rate was $267 per $100 of salary, and it would be probably pennies against that rate. But I certainly am not the expert that Laura Winghire is.
Let me ask you one more thing before she comes up. And my understanding, even though we're putting this on a list of presumptions, there still is the requirement of a burden to prove and document. And I think this letter indicates that that's totally being removed. But can you speak to that?
Yes, Chief, I think it was Chief Bellingfield had spoke at length on that. And that's one of the it is a very difficult bar to reach. This SB 131 does not address any of that. You need an initial physical exam that shows that you are not inflicted with the disease. You need to do annual exams every year for the first 7 years of your employment that show no sign of the disease. There are other exclusions. If, for example, breast cancer, if breast cancer is hereditary in your family, you may be excluded from coverage for breast cancer in this case. So there's many exclusions that it's still a difficult bar to reach, but this SB 131 addresses none of those. It just adds breast cancer to the nine presumptive causes.
Thank you. Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before the public testimony, I just want to thank Senator Holland for bringing this bill forward, and I'm honored that I'm now a co-sponsor. And I really appreciate the comments you made about this particular job, which is one I never do, you know, and I'm grateful for those who decide to do it. But I'm a little troubled by comments from Kevin Smith in his letter. May I read his one sentence that really bothers me?
Certainly.
Madam Chair, thank you. We urge you not to impede this progress with another generous benefit to firefighters for a largely hereditary disease. That comment, in particular the word generous, seems to be pretty personal to me, and it bothers me. So, Kevin, if you're online, you heard it here first. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Gray Jackson. So at this time, if Lori Winghai would like to come up, and then Mr. Collins, we're going to ask the same question of you, if you think this is going to cause a great cost burden for municipalities.
For the Welcome. Record, my name is Lori Winghire. I'm the director of the Division of Insurance for the State of Alaska. Madam Chair.
So is the question regarding the cost, the concern from some of the opposition that this is going to increase costs at the local level. And my understanding from our last hearing was that was not expected. So can you speak to that?
That is correct, ma'am. It is not expected. Could it? Of course. If all of a sudden we had 10,000 breast cancer cases, but the data is not showing that. And even when we've added cancer before, we haven't seen that many cases. And in fact, I had an email from Director Collins, and I think he can speak to it, that in the past couple of years they've only had one where this would have been applicable. So we're not seeing it as going to impact the state's or the municipalities, small or large, to a high degree. A penny or two maybe, but we're not even expecting that. Overall, work comp rates have come down in the last 4 years dramatically.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Collins, did you hear the question? We're going to go to you now. If you could speak to this issue of do you expect the cost for the employers, the municipalities to go up?
This is Charles Collins with Workers' Compensation for the record. Through the chair, I concur with Director Winghire. Our research brief that we pulled from NCCI, they have no rating, meaning that they could not find evidence of any impact on rates by including breast cancer as a presumption. And just as a back reference, in the past, since 2016, we've had 5 incidences of cancers that have been accepted as workers' compensation injuries through the system. It's a fairly minor, and I say that in as nice a way as I can, you know, by number, especially major to those that are affected by it. It can be a fairly expensive disease, as all of us know. The presumption is there that in this case, we are only adding breast cancer. Like the good senator stated, you're much more likely to have breast cancer after dealing with a career as a firefighter than normally. It increases your odds considerably. And also, if you read the statute, there is a pretty high hurdle for an employee to reach. It's a rebuttable presumption. The carrier and employer would have ample opportunity to rebut the presumption of it. And I think that it will be, I think this is the right thing to do at the right time. As Director Winghire stated, rates have come down. They've come down considerably. We have a 14% drop just this year in rates. And this is a good way to honor those who we rely on to protect us in these situations. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And Madam Chair?
Senator Holland.
I don't know if I ever put myself on the record. Roger Holland, Alaska State Senate District N. But there is other health insurance that may cover this for an individual, for their personal thing. But when they can show it's caused by the line of duty, when they actually cross those hurdles, and reach that bar, I think it's important that we have the workers' comp coverage to cover it.
Yes, and I would encourage you, Senator Holland, of course, you can choose whether to take my recommendation to communicate with the Alaska Municipal League the testimony from Ms. Wingheyer and Mr. Collins that there's not expected to be a cost increase because their letter is really assuming that there will be.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
So with that, I am going to open public testimony. And I am not seeing anyone online at this time. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify on SB 131, Workers' Comp Disability for Firefighters? Seeing none, I'll close public testimony. And, of course, again, testimony can be sent to this committee at scra@akled.gov. Are there any questions or comments from committee members? Seeing none, my thanks to Senator Holland and to staff, Mrs. Rose. What is the will of the committee, Senator Myers?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that Senate Bill 131, Work Order 32-LS0598/alpha, be moved from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
And hearing no objection, the bill moves from committee. We'll stick around for a second to sign it after we adjourn, and I'll just let folks know we plan to hold the next CNRA meeting on Tuesday, May 18th, when we'll hear invited testimony on SB 136, limitations on firearms restrictions, and SB 46, law enforcement registry use of force. So seeing no other business before the committee, we will adjourn. Let the record reflect the time is 4:55.